Mr. Secretary, first of all, welcome to Durham, and thanks for taking the time to sit down and talk with us about North Carolina's hundreds of thousands of veterans and some of what's ahead for them. So a new decade is about to start. What do you see ahead in 2020s and beyond for North Carolina veterans?
I know we've talked about the
demographic shift.
Yeah, the demographic shift is tremendous. So next year, 1 in 9 North Carolinians will be a veteran. The trends that I'm seeing across the country has North Carolina moving up the list in terms of the raw number of veterans, to the point where by the end of the next decade, North Carolina will either be nipping at the heels of California or surpassing California. By the end of next year, North Carolina will be number 4 and California 3. Veterans are choosing to stay here. And as a result of that, it is incumbent upon VA to begin the process that was laid out in the Mission Act of assessing where our future resources need to go. And in North Carolina, that means putting more people and more facilities into the state in the next decade.
So you were already having something of a building boom here. I know I've talked with the local VA folks about this. Are you talking about even more bricks and mortar potentially out there?
Yes, more bricks and mortar and more people. No, in my lifetime, I've watched Fayetteville is my hometown. I've watched us go from a traditional former Army facility on Ramsey Street to 2 massive VA facilities that I think are probably the fastest growing in the country, with more than 2,000 new veterans a month coming in and registering. We're seeing that all across North Carolina, particularly in the East. And the demand is there, and we need to make sure we meet the demand.
And this year, you just referenced the Mission Act. And this year, under the Mission Act, VA opened up private health care as an option for a lot more of its patients. Do you have any numbers yet? I mean, it's pretty early, but do you have any numbers yet that would give a sense of the response in North Carolina to that?
So I can't give you the North Carolina specific numbers. I can give you the national numbers. We kicked off Mission on June 6th. We've sent a little more than 1.3 million into the private sector. When we can't provide the care that they need in the timely manner that they demand. But at the same time, we've seen an explosion in the number of appointments within VA that we have fulfilled. We've got over 3 million more appointments that we've handled this year than we did all of last year, which shows that veterans are voting with their feet and they're choosing to stay with VA. We also have the highest patient satisfaction rates in our history. They sit at about 90%, which is where the patient satisfaction rate here in Durham is, about 89%. And that is unmatched in the private sector. The other thing that's important about Mission, and certainly here in North Carolina, is that we're now providing veterans with access to urgent care. We're keeping them out of the emergency rooms when they have a fever or flu or a sprained ankle. We're certifying more urgent care facilities every week, and I think that's one of the great benefits of the Mission Act, to put veterans on the same plane as their neighbors.
Where do you see that leaving, particularly in North Carolina, where do you see that leaving veterans, say, in 10 years or 15 years from now?
Well, in 10 years, I think what you will see is something that started in North Carolina a long time ago. I mean, we're sitting right across from Duke University. We're down the road from Chapel Hill, East Carolina, Wake Forest. We already have an integrated healthcare network for veterans in the state that also includes the military facilities at Fort Bragg, at Seymour Johnson, Camp Lejeune, and Cherry Point. So we're uniquely situated to fulfill the mandate of the Mission Act, which is to integrate health within the entire healthcare system of the United States. For North Carolina, that means making sure that we reach out to those veteran populations that don't happen to live next to Fort Bragg or are not in Durham or are not in Charlotte. The majority of our veterans in this state still live in rural areas, particularly east of Interstate 95. I just experienced something special here. I watched telehealth in action. A veteran who lives outside of Rocky Mount, suffering from the effects of combat tours in Afghanistan, both in terms of PTSD, but also in terms of his ability to hear. I watched him participate in telehealth that put our doctors in his living room. That, to me, is the key to the future, for us to get into the hard-to-reach places and also turn the corner when it comes to mental health care in this country. I'm not a medical professional. I know the military. I also know from my experience that when those veterans are going through a mental health crisis or having issues, nine times out of ten, it's more beneficial for them to stay at home and talk to someone over the screen than be forced to come into a traditional care setting with a lot of people looking at.
So I think last year was the first year you guys had exceeded 1 million video visits
right.
of some kind. And it's, I was just out in Eureka looking at that program where you're pushing telehealth into VSOs. In this case, it was a VFW post. It sounds like you're here in part to have a look at a different, slightly different kind of expansion of telehealth. What are you looking at tomorrow?
Well, it's the same principle. My focus has been on rural and tribal America, the two parts of the country where the veterans serve in higher numbers than they do in the rest of the nation. So the issues in eastern North Carolina are similar to the issues that you found in northern Montana. It is getting out to where people live as opposed to forcing them to drive, in the case that you saw in Montana, 300, 400, 500 miles round trip to get to a VA facility. Here, through the winding roads of eastern North Carolina, it's to get health care to where they live. I'm going to be in Asheboro tomorrow. I'm kicking off a new concept. Well, actually, it's a concept similar to what you saw in Montana, but this time the telehealth clinic's going to be run out of a Walmart. We're expanding again as part of an integrated health network, not only to Duke University or Chapel Hill or Wake Forest, but into the private sector, not only private hospitals, but private industry. What you saw was an example of a private-public partnership. We're going to see the same thing in Asheboro tomorrow, where veterans can come in to Asheboro, go to the Walmart, and talk to Durham, or talk to Fayetteville, or talk to Hampton, Virginia, or Atlanta. Wherever it is, we have people who meet their needs.
And the VA is creating a new telehealth hub here for oncologists. Is that... or is it already out?
It's a cancer center that's here.
My understanding is that would help not just with telehealth itself, but also recruiting physicians, recruiting other healthcare providers.
Well, absolutely. Look, North Carolina is lucky. We have medical facilities that are on the cutting edge. We're part of that. I just walked through a facility that has equipment that Duke University doesn't even have, 4D representations of arteries as people perform very, very specific cardiac surgeries, tools that we don't have across the street. We just performed the first non-live heart transplant with cooperation of Duke. Traditionally, you've had to have a heart that's given from a living donor. Because of what we have achieved with mission and cooperation and integration, we just took a massive step forward in terms of helping our veterans with something that I don't think has happened too often in the rest of the country.
And these telehealth sites, the one in Eureka obviously closes a geographic gap, like you were saying, 300 miles, 400 mile drive to a major medical center. The one here at the Walmart, you don't have that sort of gap. But one thing it seems like it may close is a psychological gap. You were referring to mental health visits.
So it's not just a psychological gap. It's an historical gap. I'll give you a quick example. My father, terribly wounded in the invasion of Cambodia, takes 3 years to recover before he's back at Fort Bragg jumping out of airplanes. In the 1970s, as a senior leader in America's most decorated combat unit, he was not even allowed to wear his uniform off post. Such were the times. For thousands of his comrades from Vietnam, because of those similar experiences and not being welcome home, they have had an aversion to interaction with the government. When we look at our suicide numbers, of the 20 veterans who take their lives every day, We know the majority are from the Vietnam era. Telehealth in places like Walmart or places like the VSO that you saw, the VFW hall that you saw in northernmost Montana, is our attempt to go beyond the traditional compartments of care and to reach out to veterans and try to make them as comfortable as possible when it comes to interaction with us. So your point is on target. It is reaching out in non-traditional ways to those who might not otherwise want to come see us in the way that most of 9.5 million veterans do on a yearly basis.
It seems like those two sites, despite their kind of differences in how far they are from VA medical centers, would draw in some veterans who otherwise might not be contacted for the same reason. But it also seems like the one here might draw in some that are just simply close to the medical center and just otherwise wouldn't come in at all. The one up there might just reach somebody because it's a long way from any sort of help.
Any way we can get people in touch with us is fine with me. And we are dealing with, for instance, the suicide crisis. It's one that grips the entire United States. I mentioned the 20 veterans a day. When I was in high school in Fayetteville, the leading cause of death amongst my peers was drunken driving. Today it's suicide for high school students. We are part of an ongoing national tragedy. Our goal is to reach out to veterans that we don't see. And if we need to take them when we find them to the closest medical care, it may not be VA. As long as we're getting them seen, then that's a step forward for us.
Besides telehealth, do you have anything else that's in the works to reach some of these veterans who aren't connected yet with the VA and kind of work that one small bright spot in the statistics?
Sure. There are a couple of things, and actually they rest on our approach to two national tragedies. One is suicide and one is homelessness. And that is going to non-traditional partners and asking for them help, their help, getting them the resources to go out and find those veterans we don't see. I'm the head of the President's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. I want to open the aperture to charities, to the localities, to non-governmental organizations, non-traditional groups, to go out and help us discover where the veterans are that we haven't reached. That is key. A few years ago, we had 400,000 homeless veterans on the street. Today, we've got about 40,000, the majority of those on the West Coast. We've made a huge dent in veterans' homelessness by going outside of the government. I think our path, if we're going to fully integrate VA with all of American healthcare, is to open up our cooperation in areas that we haven't been before, and that's the key on the suicide front.
Well, this is actually the third time we've talked, so I know for a fact that you're out and around and doing outreach. But a big picture question for those of us in North Carolina, California, Montana, outside of the D.C. bubble, it seems like the turmoil there was pretty wild even before all this impeachment stuff. And you're there, you're in the middle of it, trying to run one of the largest and most complicated bureaucracies in the world. Has all that turmoil made it harder to get things done at times?
No. I will tell you, I've been part of the VA family now for a year and 4 months. My focus first was calming the institution down because of the things that you said had been happening at VA. And the second part of my goal has just been to unleash talented people. That sounds sophomoric, but it's not much more complicated than that. My job, I'm not a medical professional, I do know soldiers, has been to give general direction, walk the post. I've been in 43 states and all of our Pacific territories just in the last year. Going places where a VA secretary has never been seen. To me, that's a fundamental military principle, to be out there, to be seen. But for me, it allows me to talk to the people who are on the front line. We have the highest patient satisfaction rates in the history of this department. We're sitting at 90%. There's nothing like that in the private sector. We've gone from the worst place in the federal government to work last year to 6. I expect this to be higher when those new statistics come out. And as I said earlier, veterans are voting with their feet now. We've had 3 million more appointments so far this year than we did all of last year. That's a testament to the trajectory that this department's on. A human institution's going to have hiccups. There's no question. Somebody's not going to get an appointment on time. But we've tried to address the systemic problems that existed in the years before, before this department changed hands. And first of all, it's an honor for me to be part of it. And I think, I do think we have the noblest mission in government, and I'm very proud to be part of it.
And lastly, there's been a noticeable increase in attention by the VA and generally, I think, for caregivers supporting veterans, wives, husbands, adult children. I mean, this kind of uptick in the talk about this feels like a shift in the way we view long-term care for veterans. Where do you see this new emphasis leading us?
Well, we're going to fill a gap that has tragically been left open for the last 50 years. Put that in perspective, Lyndon Johnson left Washington, D.C. 50 years ago in January, and the Mission Act finally tells us that it is time to look at the caregivers who've been taking care of Vietnam veterans, still our largest cohort of veterans in the country. Caregiver support is a new way of caring for people in the sense that in the old days, the formula was pretty rigid. You took care of people in a hospital setting, a setting that can be daunting, not only for the patient, but also for the family. Modern medicine tells us that the quicker you get someone home, the quicker you get someone in a comfortable and familiar setting, the acceleration in recovery will be palpable. What we are going to do, what we've started, is providing financial as well as material support to families who take care of veterans. Right now, the concentration is to the Vietnam era. We've done it for OIF and OEF. That is part of the wave of the future. It's not a new entitlement. Our goal is to get veterans and their families back on their feet and self-sustaining, and it is long past due, and I'm very proud that we really are becoming a modern 21st century healthcare administration, and this is just part of it.
Well, Mr. Secretary, thanks again for your time. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you, and thank you for bringing me home. As I think I told you before, my wife got her start when she was a student at UNC working for WUNC, so it's always good for me to be back with you.